Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to this week's Onceable, our Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I am super excited about this episode, as Crocodile just finished airing, and I thought it was amazing. Anyway, this week I have with me Jess, Laura, and Karen, which is very exciting. I'm sure you guys are as excited as I am. Just some quick info before we get into all the discussion and recap and stuff. You can reach us at Onceable, O-N-C-E-A-B-L-E, at hypeable.com. And you can leave messages on any of the posts and in the forums, or you can follow all of our Once Upon a Time news at Once Upon News. Selena posts all the best stuff up there. So what did you guys think? Give me your initial reactions of Crocodile. In case you can't tell, I really, really enjoyed this episode. Like, loved it from start to finish.
I absolutely loved this episode so much. Like, I love Rumple, Mr. Gold. And so getting all of this backstory on him was so great. And then all of the Captain Hook stuff and, like, just the twists and turns within that story were fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, I really liked it too, for the exact reason you said. I really liked finally knowing what the more detailed backstory was of Rumple. I mean, we all knew it was something to do with cowardice, but it was, we got it explained to more of a degree, so that was really cool to know that. I also really liked the Belle interaction that was both tied in with Rumple and outside of Rumple. I really thought it was cool that Belle got her library, which I know was like very Disney-esque, but I really enjoyed that. And the whole Captain Hook thing went in an area I never thought it would go in, so I enjoyed that too.
I loved the episode. I loved Hook. I loved his story. I really liked seeing Belle stand up for herself. That was really cool. And Once Upon a Time is so good at, like, they take those last 3 minutes of the show and just drop something else on you, and you're like, oh no, I have to wait a whole week for, you know, to find out what's going to happen next.
It's like in a book where every chapter has a cliffhanger. I feel like every show, like, dangles this little cliffhanger in front of you that may not be answered for weeks and weeks and weeks. So that's what, and I found myself tonight, like, I kept wanting to pick up my remote and try to fast forward through the commercials because I needed to know what happened next. Like, every commercial break was painful for me tonight. So it really was. It really was. So it was such a good episode. So just to quickly recap, because, you know, in case anyone forgot in the last, you know, couple hours what they watched. So our episode recap is this. First, we have Belle. It opens with Belle, and she has a bad dream about Rumple and wakens to find him spinning thread into gold. When she confronts him about using magic, he doesn't give her an answer. Belle goes missing, and Rumple talks to her father, who didn't know she was in Storybrooke. Basically because Rumple hid that fact from him. Later we see Ruby and Belle talking, and Ruby offers her a place to stay if she needs it and suggests that Belle gets a job at the library. At which time Belle's looking at the library, Smee sneaks up to Belle and takes her. Rumple then goes to Charming, who is acting as sheriff, in order to report Belle missing. Rumple feels Charming will help as he is the only one who knows how he is feeling. Belle's father has Smee kidnap her, and when he realizes that she may be in love with Rumple, he tries to have Smee take her across the line in order for her to forget everything. Rumple rescues Belle, but she claims him cowardly and tells both him and her father that she wants nothing to do with them, that she wants to live her own life. And then the only shot from the Enchanted Forest we see is at the very end, which is the cliffhanger part, where we see Korra talking with Hook about finding a way to Storybrooke. Then in the flashback part of the show, we see a powerless Rumple is treated poorly by his wife in public, who is later taken by Captain Hook, who says Rumple can have his wife back if he fights for her. He doesn't, and Hook takes her. Later, we see Rumple as the Dark One, who is chatting with Smee in a pub, looking for magic beans. Just when Rumple is going to leave, he sees Hook enter and decides to stay. Hook taunts Rumple, not knowing he is the Dark One. He asks after Mila, only to be told she is dead. Rumple challenges him to finish their duel and tells him he is going to die. During the duel, Rumple gets the better of Hook, and instead of killing him with a sword, he reaches in to take his heart, only to be stopped by Mila, who explains that she fell in love with Killian, or Hook, and she left with him of her own free will. She also has the bean and will make a deal with him for their lives. Rumble ends up killing Mila because she says she never loved him, but she does love Hook. He takes her heart and squeezes it just like Regina did to the huntsman. He then cuts off Hook's hand in order to get to the bean. Hook vows to find a way to kill him, and then at the end we realize that Hook played a trick on Rumple and didn't have the bean in the hand that Rumple took, and Hook uses the bean to go to Neverland, and that's where the flashback sequence ends. So that's kind of a quick overview of the highlights of the episode. Did you guys have some favorite lines as you were watching this episode? Because there were some really good ones. One of my favorite ones is when Charming looks at Rumple and is like, "Are you asking me for dating advice?" Which I thought was
great.
It was just so funny. He was just almost a little bit appalled by the fact that Rumple's asking for something so simple as dating advice. He's like, "Really? Really? After all that you've done, you want dating advice?" So I really like that. Karen or Laura, did you guys have a favorite line?
I really liked it when Hook said, "Sparkly dirt, wonderful."
My favorite ones were the serious ones. I really liked I really liked Rumple admitting, "I am a coward." I felt like that was a huge, huge, big step. And I just really liked that sincerely coming from his own lips.
And I also liked it when Hook called Rumple crocodile, because just, you know, the of knowing exactly where it was going after that and not seeing that coming. And so just that line, I was just like, "Oh my goodness. That's so great."
Yeah, I thought that was really cool how they connect such kind of far out things that you wouldn't necessarily think to connect and make the story kind of come full circle. The other one I really liked is when Mila comes in to save Hook and Rumple makes a comment about, "I didn't realize the power of true love before." And there's a statement right after that, which I couldn't catch because I was trying to type and keep notes and everything at the same time. But that whole idea about he didn't realize the power of true love, but now he does. And so it makes me think about how he now uses true love, because it's so much more powerful maybe than even the magic that he has. So I thought that was a really cool line for him to deliver in that moment. So what did you guys think of Belle's dream in the beginning?
I know this is going to sound weird. I'm having trouble remembering it.
I am too. I just remember the shock of him turning around.
The opening of Belle's dream is when, or what we see is the two of them are in Gold's shop talking, and they're talking about going out, and he gives her a necklace, and Grumpy comes in and starts demanding his axe. And then Rumple's like, we're closed. No, you can't have it. And he goes after Grumpy and basically threatens Grumpy to put the axe in his chest. And then Belle wakes up.
I remember being really surprised that, I didn't know it was a dream. Like, nothing gave it away until the very end when he turns into the Rumpelstiltskin that we know. And so that was kind of like a good twist that I didn't see coming. But I thought Gold was really acting like that, you know, toward Grumpy.
Yeah, I was the same. I had no idea it was a dream until he turned around, and just when he turned and his face was back. Well, at first, even then, I was like, what's happening? Like, is the breaking of the curse turning him back into the evil one, the Rumpelstiltskin from the Enchanted Forest? I was just totally clueless and didn't know what was happening.
I liked it because I felt like it showed that Belle really, I mean, she has all her faculties about her. Like, she really truly sees him for what he is and what he's capable of. Like, she hasn't romanticized who and what he is and what he's capable of. So I kind of liked it for that I think she's probably the only person in Storybrooke who sees both the good and bad in Rumpelstiltskin and sees it very, very clearly.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting look at Rumple from Belle's perspective, because sometimes your subconscious will put things out there that you're not willing to see for yourself. So I was wondering if that was kind of the thing going on for Belle right there. And then what about the creating of magic and keeping secrets from Belle when we see him clearly spinning gold, which I thought was such a cool little nod to the actual Rumpelstiltskin tale. I just really enjoyed it. So clearly he's making magic again. I think we all know that it's probably a way to find Bay, and later on he does state that he's making magic to get his son back when he explains things to Belle. So what did you guys think about that whole imagery that they put before us?
I wish that Rumple would learn his lesson already, you know, as far as lying to Belle and, you know, doing things behind her back. It's not going to win him any favor in her eyes. But, I mean, I can understand why he's doing it. And I think that if he was honest with her up front they could have avoided a lot of this trouble that they got themselves into. And Belle, you know, even at the end, Belle did kind of understand why he was doing it and that he needed to do it. So I kind of just wish that he would, you know, learn to trust her and to just tell her, you know, what he's doing and why he's doing it, to just be honest with her.
I think that this whole plot really just showed us a lot about Rumple's character, because the secret that he lied about, it was so stupid. I mean, that was nothing for her. It wasn't like he was doing magic to harm anybody or to cause any mischief. It was to try to figure out a way to get his son back. Something that he didn't need to lie about, but he's just so used to having to lie and having to be sneaky. It's just such a part of his nature that he doesn't even think about it. It's just his natural reaction. And so to see him go through the episode and to see like the pain that he felt with Belle being away from him and missing and him not knowing if she was okay, like you could really tell that he truly does still care for her. And then so for him to open himself up at the end and tell her his feelings and the process that he's been through as he's gotten to this point, and to trust her with that and be vulnerable in telling her that without any promise that she would take him back or give him another chance. You know, as far as he was concerned, or all he knew, she was still going to be done with him. But he wanted to give that to her because he loves her and he's wanting to change, but it's going to take time because this other side is just so ingrained in his nature and just such a part of who he is. And so I think that it really, this showed more than anything, the development in his character and how he is wanting to be better and to be good for Belle and for his son.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I also think what was interesting is if he had just told her in the beginning, there's so much to make people care for him when he says why he's doing it. But I think for him, he had shown weakness before, and with everything that happened with Mila, I don't think he ever wants to show any sort of weakness or love again. Because for him, the second he cares for more than, you know, maybe just Belle, who was brought into his world under different circumstances, it becomes a really dangerous thing for him. He tends to lose. So I kind of got that vibe from him too, that he doesn't want to share a secret that he may not win at with the whole Balefire story and stuff. So I don't know, but I thought it was a really interesting plot line for them to pursue and for them to look at. So what about Belle in this story? I really felt like Belle came into her own throughout this whole storyline for lots of different reasons. And I thought it was really sweet how she still, after everything, as Laura pointed out earlier, she's probably the only person that sees anything good within Rumpelstiltskin. So she wants him to change and to find happiness and to be happy, I think, with her. So it's a really interesting way for her to see, kind of for her to come into her own in a lot of different ways with this one episode. We see a lot of things come out about her strength, her independence, and her willingness to work with Rumpel, as well as to put her foot down and be like, I'm not taking anymore. So what did you guys think about Belle as she developed through the episode?
I loved how she took charge of her own life and really stood up to both her father and Rumpelstiltskin, who felt like they were doing what was best for her without actually consulting her. And it was really nice to just see her say, no, you can't control me. You can't tell me, you know, who I love or what I'm going to do. And because you guys are like this, I'm just done with you. And, you know, she went off on her own. And I like that she's confident enough to be independent and just say that, okay, I'm going to find my own place, my own job, and I'm just going to do my own thing for a while.
Yeah, I kind of felt like of the two people, like Rumpel and her father, to me, I was like so shocked at what her father was doing, that he was just going to send her, I mean, over the line like that in the car. I mean, it's not like any of them can go. And what are they going to do? Have this girl with no memory, like, wandering around the tunnels? Who thought that was a good idea? I mean, I just was, like, really, really shocked at what her father was going to do, because I didn't feel like there was, like, a guarantee of her personal safety with what he was doing. I mean, like, Rumpel, like, yeah, should have said her father was looking for her and stuff like that. Okay, fine. But at least he wasn't putting her in danger. I felt like her own dad was putting her in, like, serious danger.
Yeah, that whole thing was crazy to me. I mean, I get that he was worried about Rumpel and all that kind of stuff, but, I mean, that was just such an extreme reaction. And I mean, there were just so many better ways that he could have handled it. But Beauty and the Beast is my absolute all-time favorite Disney animated film. And so, you know, in that film, Belle is very strong and very self-assured. And so I loved getting to see that again in this Belle. And it actually, in the scene where she confronts her dad and Rumpel in the tunnels, it actually kind of reminded me of the scene from Aladdin where Jasmine comes out and's like, "How dare you? I am not some prize to be won." And traipses off. But that same idea of, you know, I'm in charge of my own fate, and how dare you try to tell me what I can or cannot do. And I really liked that development of her character. And the show is so good about taking these princess characters and giving them strong personalities and making them strong female characters that take charge of their own lives and don't just wait for Prince Charming to come get them. And I love that.
I like especially Belle's reaction there too at the end, which was just like, okay, thank you, sincerely thank you for saving my life. However, I'm not going off with you. You know, it was like she gave Rumpel his due and the credit for thanking him, but it wasn't like, okay, everything is a little better, now I'm going with you. I kind of liked that it's, you know, she still has feelings for him, but she wants to see him work at it. And I thought that was really cool.
And it was so cute when she asked him out on a date at the end, like, you want to get a hamburger? I've never had one. Like, that was adorable. And I like that, you know, she's giving him that chance, but she's not just blindly falling back into it. You know, she's going to try to take things slow and make sure that he's really changing. And these are genuine steps that he's taking towards a new self.
That's true. My favorite part, I think, is when he kind of gave her the library. Much like you, Jess, one of my favorite Disney stories is Beauty and the Beast. And that library scene in both movie and the TV show kind of just put Rumpel or the Beast in a whole different light. And it kind of gave mm-hmm. Belle this like moment. And I loved every minute of that. I thought it was so fantastically done. And we talked about Belle's dad a little bit, but what about him as a father? Like, he's nothing like the one from the movie. He always wanted to save his daughter. This guy is kind of just like, if it means making you forget absolutely everything, I'm going to do it. I mean, is it because Rumpel is so bad that he'd rather his daughter be kind of almost dead to them all rather than have anything to do with Rumpel, do you think? Or is there something else going on with the dad?
His heart is in the right place and that he thinks he's doing the right thing. But, I mean, talk about literally taking everything away from your own child without her consent at all. I mean, she pretty much loses her entire life if he does that. And I mean, that was just not the right decision to make.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little hard when you realize that her dad is the one who hires Smee to capture her and then to send her into the land of you shall not remember. That was a little hard to take, I think, but for all the characters involved. So it's really interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out between Belle and her father in future episodes, or if they even kind of go back and revisit that at all. So here comes a big one. Are you guys ready? What did you think of Mila, Rumpel's wife?
I really disliked her. I mean, I guess maybe for me, because I am a mother, I just don't get how you abandon your children. I don't care if you're married to a guy who, I mean, it's not like he was beating her up, you know? He wasn't, like, verbally abusive. He wasn't physically abusive to her. He was a coward. And I guess she married him for whatever reason, even though she didn't really love him or whatever. But, I mean, I don't care. You have this child. You have a responsibility. Like, to me, I just don't get how you just up and abandoned your child. I really totally disliked Mila.
Same here. She was just the epitome of selfishness. I mean, I don't have children, but of course, you know, I know my mother and the sacrifices that she made for me. And I've worked with kids and, you know, parents, they tend to just everything is for their children. Like they forget themselves and they just do everything for their kids, no matter what, to make their children happy. And that's just crazy. I mean, if she really was that hell-bent and determined to go, then at least take him with you or something. Like, that was just insane to me that she was that selfish.
Yeah, and I don't feel like she was leaving the child with Rumpel feeling like, oh, my son, I'm not a good mother. My son would be so much better without me. He would be better off with his father. Like, I don't feel like that's the kind of decision she made. I feel like her decision was like, I'm not having enough fun and I'm bailing out. Like, so to me, that's what really angered me.
That's exactly what it seemed like. And she even said, you know, the thing that made her quote unquote fall in love with Captain Hook was his tales of adventure.
And he's roguishly handsome, let's face it. That probably had something to do with it. But yeah, I thought, I don't know, it was hard because you kind of feel bad for if you're living in a village like that where your husband is considered the coward, your life can't be so great. You're kind of looked down upon by, you know, all of your neighbors, and everybody is just kind of turning their noses up at you, and your husband's a coward. And in kind of that realm of a world, it's typically a patriarchal family. So if your husband's a coward, your whole family's a bunch of cowards. And she tended to be a little bit more of a wild child. You know, she's in the pub carousing with the pirates. And so, yes, she's a bad person, I think, for a lot of different reasons. She didn't love him. She wasn't fair to him. You know, she took off willingly, not captured like they had originally said. And she did leave her child behind. In the end, was she ever redeemable? I don't know. She was willing to give her life for Hook. So she did prove that she could love and was capable of loving, but it doesn't negate the other things that she did. So she was an interesting character because I thought she kind of brought a lot to the table in terms of Rumple's backstory and in terms of making Rumple and the Dark One who he was in a lot of ways. I think she helped kind of mold him into this bitter, untrusting person because of the things that she did.
I agree with that. I'm kind of on the fence about Mila just because I think on the one hand, you can't really blame her for wanting to get away and to do something exciting and, you know, go off with the pirates and stuff like that. But I definitely agree that she went about it the wrong way. I mean, to leave your child behind is something I can't even fathom. But yeah, I didn't completely dislike her. I liked her more at the end, like when you said she gave her life for Hook and everything and stood up to Rumpelstiltskin. But I didn't particularly like her a whole lot either just because of what she did.
Yeah, her storyline is tough because you want to like her, and at the same time you're kind of like, oh, but you're just, there's not a lot there to like at this point. So I see where you're coming from, Karen, about being on the fence, because she had a complicated life too, I guess, in a sense.
I was just gonna say, like, for me, like, even though at the end, you know, she stood up for, you know, Captain Hook and everything and was gonna give up her life for him, I just can't get past the fact that she would leave her son, even Rumple, everything he did, all the bad that he did, and as evil as he became, he always loved his son, and he was trying to make a better life for his son, or get back to his son, or do something for his son. Like his son was at the core of everything he did, no matter how twisted and ugly and warped it was. He had his son at his heart. And for her to just, like, whatever. And even at the end when she was bartering the bean for their lives, like, because she knew that Rumple was trying to get back to their kid. She didn't care. She didn't want to get their son back. You know, she didn't know where he was or if he was safe or okay, but she didn't seem too worried about that. She just wanted to save her supposed love's life. And that's crazy.
True. I actually didn't even think about that, but you're completely right.
Yeah, she's not going to get the Parent of the Year award. So that's a very good point, though. I didn't even think about that. She didn't really ask about Bay. She just wanted to get Hook away from him. Excellent point indeed. What about Hook? What was your initial reaction to this portrayal of Hook? Because I think it's a lot different from the Hooks that we have seen in various movies and Disney-fied movies and, you know, other movies. And this is not a Hook that we've seen before, really. So how did you guys feel about Hook? Because I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked the way he played Hook. I liked just the whole storyline behind Hook. I thought it was really well done and different in a way that connects to this world, to the Enchanted Forest, to the fairy tales that they're spinning in such a different way. It kind of fit into all of that.
I feel like the jury's a little bit still out on him as to where he's going to come down. Like, there are definitely, like, certain characters you see as more dark than light, and I think he's sort of in the middle. Like, he's more maybe amoral and opportunist. I don't know. I feel like I need to see more before I judge, like, what to make of him exactly.
I agree. I like how they laid his story out, because for, like, Regina and Rumpelstiltskin, we sort of get the bad guy version of them first, and then we delve into their backstory and learn more about them and learn how they're human. Whereas he sort of started out, I mean, granted, a pirate, so not, you know, the greatest guy in the world, but he was a good guy who had Mila and all that, and then Rumple took that away from him, and now we're sort of getting into like the bad guy version of him. So I kind of like how they set it up like that.
I guess that's really the question. Is he really a bad guy, or is he just someone who wants to avenge the death of his love? There's a distinct difference, I think, between the two.
I was going to say, maybe that's our poll this week, is deciding on what he's like, because I think there's a lot of questions out there on him.
I want to see what he was like in Neverland. You know, I want to see their interpretation of him in Neverland. Was he evil to everybody, like, you know, the Peter Pan stories? And or was he just like this dude looking around for his revenge who sometimes got in the way of Peter Pan and other people and did things that he needed to do to get his end? Or, you know, like what interpretation they take of him? Like, how evil did he become across the board? Is it just focused on Rumpel and revenge, or is it something that infected his core and changed him? I mean, of course, he was a pirate, so it's not exactly like he was, you know, awesome morality to begin with, but, you know, he wasn't like, I didn't get the feeling that he was evil, just that he was somebody who had a loose moral compass and was doing the pirate thing. So I'm curious of what he would have been like, what changes were made in him after that.
Did anyone get a kind of odd feeling when he talks about going to Neverland, that it's almost like he's Peter Pan in a sense, because he was excited about Neverland in a way that, like, traditional hooks have not been excited. Like, and he convinces Smee to come because it's a place where you never grow old and you're always youthful and it's so wonderful. It's like he belonged there in a sense, like Peter Pan belonged there. Like when he meets Wendy, he's excited to take her to Neverland kind of thing. Like that's what it felt like. So it gave me this odd vibe that is, are Hook and Peter Pan kind of the same person and something changes, or I don't know. I'm sure I'm completely wrong, but I kind of got that vibe from that. When he was talking about Neverland.
I thought it definitely crossed my mind too, but then I don't really know how they would pull that off, seeing as, you know, Hook is supposed to be the bad guy and Peter Pan is like his arch nemesis or whatever. I don't know how they could spin the stories together like that.
Hey, Rumpelstiltskin is Rumpelstiltskin the Beast and now the Crocodile. I'm sure they could come up with something. Maybe he has a twin. I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay, does anyone have any other thoughts on Hook and his storyline, which I thought was really cool?
I'm going to say that I think we're almost meant to take him as this really evil guy because, correct me if I'm wrong, but when they sort of introduced the episode tonight, didn't they say something about like, oh, you think Rumpelstiltskin is bad? Well, you haven't met Hook yet.
I don't recall. But see, I don't read any of the spoilers or any of that stuff. So it could have been said and I missed it because I don't like to be spoiled. I know that's really odd, but it's true. I don't like to read ahead if I don't have to.
I'm the same way.
We'll have to look back and see. But maybe Hook has become this horrible person. Or maybe Cora will make Hook this horrible person because that's what she needs him to be. Because see, now we have this unknown element of Cora working with Hook, which is just a little scary. Because if Hook is meant to be this awful, horrible pirate guy, and now he's working with Cora, who we know is an awful, horrible mother in general, no good can come of that. I guess only time will tell how that's going to play out. So another interesting thing that was in this episode is we got to see some more of Red back in regular old Storybrooke. And I loved how Red was so kind to Belle and offered to take her in and help her out, and how she used her senses, her wolf senses that have now come back a bit more, to help find Belle at one point. So what did you guys think of Red's, like, it wasn't a lot for Red to do in this episode, but I just liked the integration of Red. I think she's really fun, and Megan Ori as an actress does an amazing job playing Red. So I just really enjoy seeing that. Or playing Ruby, I should say. She's a little Red Riding Hood, but playing Ruby.
I really liked that. She was like she was willing to help Charming. I mean, she had her trepidations, and then once Charming explained why, she was willing to trust him. So I feel like that says a lot about his character and her ability to reach out. Plus, I feel like she also knows what it's like to be mistrusted and to want people to turn a new leaf over with her and to prove that she could be in control. So I feel like it showed a lot of different dimensions to her character this week.
I always enjoy when Ruby is on screen, and I think her dynamic with Belle was really interesting and really cool, and she just always seems like she's trying her hardest to help everybody out. You know, she brought lunch down to the mines and everything, and she's just a really cool character. She's been one of my favorites since the beginning.
Yeah, and I love the brief little glimpse how they're all trying to dig in the mine and to kind of find the fairy dust or whatever it is that they're looking for down there to get Sneezy's memory back. I love that little glimpse, because this is one thing the show does well. It has a massive character list, and it gives us little glimpses. Even if we don't get a lot from each character every week, we always get little glimpses as to what the others are doing, which I think is really kind of cool. And I like how that plays into the overall storyline. So that was fun. I'm really curious to see what happens if they actually do find the fairy dust, though. Is everyone going to have magic as well? You know, are the nuns going to become fairies again, and how that will all play out?
More importantly, will they be able to date?
Yes. Right? The great concern of Dr. Whale. Oh my God. Of all the inappropriate comments, like the world is falling apart and you're worried if the nuns are real nuns. I mean, get a life. You know what I thought was really funny too? Like they sort of panned into the scene, you could tell that everybody's like, you know, with their pickaxes going away. And before you could really see Charming's face, there's this guy in this muscle shirt. And at first I was like, when did the dwarves start getting guns? I was like, isn't he kind of tall to be a dwarf? And then they panned back and it was him. I'm like, oh, got it. Okay. Because I was like, since when did the dwarves get hunky? This is new.
It's a new dwarf.
Yeah, that was an interesting way.
His name is Hunky, the buff. Yeah.
Oh, that was pretty funny. And then in this episode, we see a lot of Rumple kind of being called a coward. Like, his overarching storyline from beginning to end this episode was his cowardice. Poor guy, he couldn't catch a break no matter what he did or tried to do. So how do you think that has shaped the Rumple we know today? That all this talk of him being a coward, both in the past and in the present, what do we think that's going to do for Rumple? You know, how is that going to change him? If it changes him, is it going to keep him being who he is? What did you guys feel about that big full circle, basically, of Rumple's story?
I really enjoyed it. I liked how he sort of, at the end there, he finally admitted that he is a coward, and he sort of went from two extremes, the one being that he was like, you know, a huge, huge coward, and he didn't stand up for anything. And then he went all the way to the other side, and he got all this power and everything. And yes, he was still a coward, but he like overcompensated for it. And now he's sort of back in the middle, where he knows that he has this problem, and he knows that, you know, it's affecting other people. And he realizes that even though he had his magic, he was still a coward, because he was still running away from things and not dealing with them the proper way. So now that he knows that, I'm really hoping that he's going to be able to rein himself in and become a better person, the person that Belle sees him for, and that he can remedy their relationship.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was really cool was how they threw Rumple, and I mean, all these different actions that he took, they showed that there are many different forms of cowardice. And, you know, that sometimes being like the big guy who, like the big man on the playground who can take care of whatever problem and do whatever, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're brave. That can be a form of cowardice. You know, bullying is a form of can be a form of cowardice as well. And, you know, the cowardice that he showed in love and not trusting and opening himself up, like how that is a huge act of bravery to make yourself vulnerable for somebody that you love. And so I really liked how they showed that there is more than one form of cowardice, and how he had to learn that lesson, especially coming from the Enchanted Forest, where I'm sure, you know, where there actually are big monsters and things for you to fight, and there's an easy way to differentiate and categorize someone who's brave and someone who's a coward, that there is more to it. It's not as black and white as some people might have you believe.
I think, like, too, it's part of the potential road to redemption from Rumpelstiltskin, like admitting what his faults are, like true, like admitting it and owning it. You know, I feel like this is the first time he's actually sort of owned the damage he's done. So I don't think it's certainly, you know, going to wash away everything he's ever done to everybody. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that he's done a lot of harm, but I think it was the first step in him getting it right.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to see when they kind of, how all of it come together and play both in the past and the present. You guys make some really good points about how he's kind of come around. And I like the point about his cowardice being showcased in lots of different ways. It's very true. I didn't realize it until you said it, that it wasn't always just the same cowardice over and over again. There were lots of different things that he did that were construed as being cowardice. Another thing I was just thinking about was, we see Rumple kill Mila by taking out her heart and squishing it in his hand. Is that a trick that he taught Regina, do you think?
I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah, I'm a little curious. I need some more Regina Rumpel backstory because I almost feel like he trained her to be who she is. Do you know what I mean? Because she did the exact same thing to the Huntsman, except she had his heart in a box, which is a whole nother trick. But still, like, he had her heart in his hand, and until he chose to squish it, Mila was still alive, which is the exact same thing that was going on with the Huntsman. So how do they both know the same trick? I'm very curious about this and if we ever get to see how that comes about.
I was wondering the same thing as you. I of course noticed the similarity, and there is obviously a huge connection between those two characters. You know, now that we've had, I don't know if we've only had hints or if we've had it confirmed that she was the child from the Rumpelstiltskin story. Yeah, I definitely want to know more about their relationship and how much he taught her.
It'll be very interesting to find out, I think. Another thing that happens in this episode towards the very, very end is we have Rumpel, who decides he's going to take Smee and interrogate him a little bit. And at the end, we see him talking to Smee and asking about Captain Hook, because he still wants that magic bean and he wants to know where Hook is. Because there's a small part of him that thinks that Hook may be in Storybrooke. However, Smee tells him, "I've never seen him here. As far as I know, he's not here." So is Rumpel just looking for the bean, or is Rumpel looking for more?
I think he's looking for a porthole. I mean, obviously Hook was finding Neverland way before there was ever, like, an issue and the kingdoms divided and everything else. So I'm sure Rumpel knows legend and lore of Hook finding his way to another land. So I think that's why he wants it, because if he can find a porthole that way, can he find him a portal, you know, crossing the line without getting in trouble that way? I think he's maybe looking for information and a means to an end.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Smee said, "I was brought here, but he wasn't, as far as I know. I've never seen him here." So was Captain Hook in Neverland when the curse came? Was there something else that affected him from not having to be pulled through by the curse? So I think it's a really interesting, again, his backstory. I think the more we get of it, the more information it'll give us in all of how the curse worked and who it didn't take. So I'm really curious to see how that kind of plays out as we move forward.
I mean, there's also the chance that Smee is lying. I mean, I don't know why he would be lying, but there's also the chance that he was lying and he's found a way to get there. So I don't know. But considering we see Cora and Hook and they don't seem to know a way in, then I guess it means that Smee probably is telling the truth.
Yeah, I think that considering we see Hook and Cora on one side and Rumpel and everyone else, including Smee on the other, that there isn't necessarily a portal that they came through, that he was pulled in with the curse. So Smee may have just been somewhere else, away from Hook, when the curse happened. But if not, if they were in the same place, it's interesting to see why one was taken and not the other. And then bringing up again the very, very end, we see Cora and Hook, and the big question remains, what is their connection and what is Hook really after? Clearly, he is looking for Rumpel, because as they're talking, he said, "That is where he is," and she says, "Yes, and that is where she is." So Cora is clearly after Regina. Hook is clearly after Rumpel. I think they better batten down the hatches, because those two together could be dangerous. Although Rumpel and Regina together could also be incredibly dangerous. So I guess it just depends on who has the element of surprise, perhaps.
Man, what about a showdown with Rumpel and Regina united against Cora?
I say mid-season finale. Bring it.
Talk about a magical display.
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating to see kind of that tag team of people against each other, because there's so much backstory to both of those stories that I can't wait to see all that play out. I'm really excited about it. Okay, so at the end of this episode, we saw previews for next week's episode, which, by the way, I cannot wait for, because there are little hints about Dr. Whale and his role in Regina's backstory and all sorts of good things. So the episode is called The Doctor. Yes, love it. And the description for the episode that was released says, "While Regina continues to try and stop using her magic in an attempt to win back Henry's affections, she begins seeing what she believes is a ghost from her past. And when Mary, Margaret, and Emma discover a lone survivor from an ogre massacre, Emma begins to question whether or not he's telling the truth. Meanwhile, in the fairy tale land that was, Regina finds herself failing at learning the dark arts from a dark master because something from her past is preventing her from using her magic for evil." So, that is the description that we were given of next week's episode. with the trailer that we saw for next week's episode, did you guys get an idea of who Dr. Whale might be?
I want to know if he has Igor with him. That's all I want to know. You.
Because the second I saw what was going on, I'm like, are you kidding me?
And does he get
is
a little
that
hump
Frankenstein?
That, right. And does he get a little hump that moves around? I'm like a really big fan of that movie. So I was just like, oh my God.
Is his first name Victor? Do we know his first name?
The thing is, too, it's either something people are going to love or hate. Like, my husband has been watching this with me. Last week, he got so mad because he is, like, Mr. Arthurian legend, and he was, like, all mad. He's like, there is no way Lancelot is interacting with Snow White. He was just, like, really incensed about it. So I have a feeling that when we get to Frankenstein, it's going to be the same thing. There are going to be people who are either going to love it or hate it.
I think I love it. I'm not going to lie. Because at this point, you have to – it's either you're open to the idea of mashups or you're not. And I think that's what it comes down to when you watch the show. You really have to be willing to accept that anything can happen. Any storylines could cross. Any character could be more than one person. And if you're really like kind of a straight-laced, I believe in this lore and this would never happen anywhere else, then it's not going to work for you. So I think I'm excited about it. I don't know if everyone's excited. And I could be completely wrong. He may not be Frankenstein, although there are lots of indications that he definitely was Frankenstein. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder what else is in the public domain right now that they're going to grab that were Disney's back catalog. I don't know.
That's
when his vampires come in. That's all I want to know.
If he is Frankenstein, that's just interesting to me because it's not really like a fairy tale or a children's story at all. So it makes me wonder, you know, what other, like, does that open it up to all works of fiction that are even remotely in like sci-fi fantasy genre? Like, are we going to start having spaceships and stuff? Like, I'm just curious where they're going to draw the line. You know what I mean?
Well, is there another figure like Frankenstein? Or, I mean, maybe we're overthinking it. Maybe it's just, I mean, does Rasputin from Anastasia, does he bring people back from the dead? Does he have that power? Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that. So he could be that kind of doctor because Rasputin had those elements to him. I don't know. That was the first thing that popped to my head as I'm watching this preview was that, oh my, what other option is there but Frankenstein?
No, I agree with you. It definitely looked like he was going to be Dr. Frankenstein. Yeah, that's just, you know, it just makes me, I mean, I'm totally all for it. I'm just curious where they would draw the line for works of fiction that they're going to cross in here.
This is very true. It's very curious because, I mean, we have the glimpses of the Wizard of Oz ideas and, you know, Alice in Wonderland. And I wonder if it's that time frame because Frankenstein was written way, 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 way back when. That's why it's public domain, much like Alice in Wonderland was written so long ago. So I wonder if they're pulling from a time period of when works were written, not necessarily of they are fairy tales or folklore or myths. Do you know what I mean? If it's that kind of idea behind it now. I'm really excited for next week. And I have a feeling again next week I'm going to be like sitting there with my remote trying to fast forward through the commercials even though it's live TV. Commercials are so, so overrated, I tell you.
Yes.
Okay. So why don't we get into our listener feedback? We had some really interesting thoughts this week. The first one is from Allie. And she says, basically, I was just wondering if you guys have seen any theories like this out there pertaining to Emma being the Swan Princess, excuse me. So Emma being the Swan, her fairy tale being the Swan Princess. And if we think of one, can we tell her? And how might the Swan Princess story be manifested in Emma? So what do you guys think about Emma being the Swan Princess? I have a vague recollection of someone telling me that they heard from Kitsis and Horowitz that this was indeed true, that in like an interview somewhere that Emma's story is indeed the Swan Princess. Does anyone recall that?
I'm not up on that fairy tale enough to like know how that would tie in specifically. So I'm not that good at making a judgment call on it. But I mean, just the fact that it is Emma Swan, I mean, it would certainly make sense. So you could go at it from that angle.
I want to do a quick rundown on that because been so long that I don't even really remember what it's about.
Sure. This one. Oh, go ahead. Do you have it, Jess?
I'm trying to remember. I know.
It's based on Swan Lake, the ballet. So we have a king whose daughter is named Odette. He and his friend, the widowed queen, Uberta, decide to have Odette and the queen's son, Prince Derek, meet. They want to have them married in hopes that they'll fall in love so the kingdoms can unite. And then Odette and Derek are still children at this time, and them meeting just is terrible. It doesn't work out at all. So years and years pass, they become adults, and finally they begin to fall in love after meeting several times. And during the royal brawl, Derek expresses his wish to marry Odette for her beauty and pretty looks, which upsets her into rejecting him. So he's a little, his proposal was slightly shallow, and she didn't go for it. Sounds kind of like Emma. And so when she leaves with her father the next day, they're intercepted en route by Rothbart, the evil sorcerer who desires William's kingdom for himself. He kidnaps Odette and fatally injures William. Derek is alerted to the situation, and when William tells him with his dying breath where what happened to Odette, Derek sets out to find her. So Queen Uberta, they can't find the Swan Princess, or Odette. So Queen Uberta tries to find her son another princess to marry, and he doesn't want that. He only wants Odette. So he goes looking for her, and they hope that they can find her, because her father said that she was taken by a great animal. So Rothbart has Odette in his lair at Swan Lake, and he casts a spell to make her look like a swan. And then so during the day, she's a swan, and at night, she's human again. And so that's kind of how it goes until the prince goes and rescues her. So that's the fairy tale, or the myth of the Swan Princess.
See them doing maybe a tie-in with Henry's father as sort of like a redemption story. They didn't get along, and then, you know, they didn't see each other for a while, and maybe he like comes back and, you know, they fall in love again or something like that.
I mean, it definitely has, I think they could make it work for her. And it's a good question, because this wasn't her whole email. In her email, she asked, you know, where does she get the last name Swan? We don't really know anything about her foster care parents or anything like that. So it would be interesting to know more about her actual human time, like the time she spent in our world before the fairy tale, you know, before everything, the curse came through, and before she moved to Storybrooke. Because all we know was that she was a bounty hunter. That's really all we have. So we don't know where she got her last name from, or how all that came about. So that would be an interesting thing to see, and that would help feed into it. So it's very possible that she's the Swan Princess. And I really, really think that I've heard people say, or read it in an interview somewhere, that they did confirm that she is indeed the Swan Princess. So I think it's only a matter of time before we kind of see that play out.
Well, my question with that would be, because she, you know, she was sent to our world when she was a baby, so she doesn't really have a fairy tale story yet. So if she gets a fairy tale story as the Swan Princess, then wouldn't it have to happen now? You know, while she's in fairy tale land now, or sometime in the future? You know, it wouldn't be something that we would see in a flashback, because she was never there before.
No, but her story could have played out in the human world, because she is connected to the fairy tale world.
Yeah.
It's all so complicated.
Natalie said, from season one, it's clear how protective Regina is of Henry, but I think, to a certain extent, we also see how much she cares about him, too. My only question is, why did she desire to adopt a child after she sent the curse? We have never seen her give any subtle hints about her wanting a child. Did she want one because she's lonely, wants to be loved? I think it would be really interesting to find out why. Also, I was curious to know if Regina knew who Henry's mother is in the first place, because if she knew, would she really want to take care of the grandchild of Snow White and Charming? Those are all really good questions that I've wondered too. Part of me wondered if she did know who Henry was and like initially wanted to get him almost like for collateral, and then ended up developing an attachment for him in spite of her intentions or something. I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's a tricky one, because if she knew and she took him, wouldn't that increase the likelihood that Emma would turn up? Wouldn't that only damage the curse, knowing that Emma's the only one that could break it?
Good point.
I feel like she just wanted somebody to unconditionally love her. And the only person she can do that with is somebody who's a clean slate. Like, she wanted somebody who was going to love her, that she wasn't going to force to love her, wasn't going to be under a spell, didn't know past history. Like, I think that was her motivation with Henry. And it doesn't always work, but I think that's what she wanted, was just unconditional love. And the best way to get that was adopting this baby.
Maybe that's why she named him Henry, because previously the only person who loved her unconditionally was her father, who she murdered.
Or we can go back to mine and Laura's crackpot theory, where he is actually some incarnation of her father. I'm just saying, it's there. I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, just throwing that back out.
You know, people don't think I'm crazy enough. We might as well throw that into the mix. So yeah, I think there are a lot of questions regarding why Regina did take Henry and how much she knew or didn't know about Henry's background. But I think Laura does have a really valid point, saying that she just really wants someone to love her. Hence the reason why she's trying to be good in a sense right now, because she wants Henry to still love her, even after everything. So I tend to believe that it was more about unconditional love than it was about vindiction or anything like that, because of how she's behaving now. So I don't know. We'll see how that all plays out. Okay, Laura, do you want to read the next one?
Sure, sounds fun. Sarah wrote in, and she wrote in regarding the dirty scripts. If you don't know what this is, there's a post up on Hypeable today, and it talks about how when they write the scripts out, in the stage direction, in the action, their language is far more colorful than the PG-rated or G-rated Disney-esque version we see on screen. So I'll just, like, bleep stuff out here. So here's what she's talking about. The original script for the episode Skin Deep came out, and all of the Rumbel shippers were cracking up over the description of how Rumpelstiltskin reacts to Belle. He is effing struck, and when she kisses him, it says, "And then some effing magic happens." I think it's crazy. I think it's really cool. The reason they were saying they do it is that I guess it's just really language in the 21st century, and it gives more of an incentive and character direction to the actors playing the scene to just get an idea of how they're feeling in any given situation. And the whole scripts are like filled with like big exclamation points and caps locks and things like that to like get the emotion of it be across.
I think it is hysterical. Really, when I read that article, I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. But very enjoyable all the same. So just to review last week's poll, we were discussing Cora and her need for that magic dust, which I think was pretty much actually answered in this episode. But you all overwhelmingly said that Cora took the dust to not keep in her fancy jar collection on a shelf somewhere, but to actually use it for a portal back to Storybrooke. And again, we clearly see at the end of this episode that that is her intent as she's talking to Hook. However, I think we also learned that that dust is not complete. She needs something more for it to work. Not quite sure what that more is, but she does need something more. I have a sneaking suspicion it has to do with Snow and Emma, but I'm not sure yet. So, this week's poll, as we mentioned earlier, is going to be about Captain Hook and where we think he lies in terms of his evilness and where that's going to fall. Because is he truly a man who has become evil? Is he just a man seeking revenge? Or what's his deal? So we will have that poll up. Make sure you voice your opinion so that we know what you think. And of course, you can always leave your comments and questions and theories for us on any of our posts in the forums, or you can email us at onceable@hypeable.com. You can also tweet at Once Upon News and follow all the latest news stories there. So thank you again for listening. It was great having everyone here, and I'm so excited about this episode still, even an hour and a half after it aired. So thank you all for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Jessica.
And I'm Karen.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll meet back here again next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.